On today's episode of The Good Word, Law Murray joins us to talk about the Golden State Warriors and why they should be worried about the Houston Rockets, why Doc Rivers deserves more credit than he gets, and we go deep on the LA Clippers, including what's at stake for them over the next couple of months. That and much more coming up on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. We are also on YouTube, so you see the man in the hoodie next to me, my man Law Murray. He covers the Los Angeles Clippers for The Athletic. We had him on in August, and we were strangely optimistic about the Clippers at that time. We were rewarded with some stuff from the Clippers a few months ago, and now we are back to being concerned. How you doing, Law?
I feel good. I don't play for the team, so, you know, I have every reason to just chill out till we get what we get on Monday night, but I feel good. Blessed to be here with you, Vinny.
This is the fun time of the year where the playoffs start coming like into a little bit more focus. You start seeing a little bit more of, you know, now that we're getting used to this sort of play-in reality. You know what I mean? Like we're things are slowly starting to sort of like shape themselves. You know what I mean? Right. And we're going to go real deep on the Clippers because I got a lot of questions. I saw the Pelicans yesterday in Detroit. That's looking like that's going to be the first round matchup. But before we start, just a couple of house cleaning notes. The G League Ignite shut down after this current season. That was announced on Thursday. That was something that we thought kind of would happen if you listened to Adam Silver during the All-Star press conference. I thought it was really ambitious, Law, but I felt like this was a necessary sort of transition given NIL, given what college basketball should operate as a feeder system. Is that how you kind of see it?
That's part of it. I mean, I think the other part of it is that team was terrible. they're what, 2-30?
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
It reminds me of back when the NBA used to fold teams. It's like, yeah, we don't need this anymore. We'll take 5 years, figure out what market needs to be back here or whatever. I think the other part of it is every NBA team now has an affiliate, you know? So Ignite was kind of like sticking out there like a sore thumb. I think the Mexican City team is more relevant than Ignite now. So by the time the Suns get back into the G League, like, remember, like, we're old enough to remember when the Suns, there was Northern Arizona, right? They sold because of whatever the heck they were doing with the franchise, the Suns at the time, they sold the G League rights to Detroit to have their team. And there was all this movement, right? Like, every team values the G League. It's just that when Ignite started, like you said, Vinny, we were just in a different space. The world was in a different space. It was right before the pandemic when they announced that Ignite was coming. And so I just feel like it got off to a rough start because of that. And then the progression just went the other way. And then college basketball, obviously, kids have other avenues to get paid before they play. Overtime Elite, that's another factor, right, that we weren't thinking of when Ignite started. And now it's like, all right, you literally had two kids drafted top five out of that program. It's just different. And I think the NBA wants to see what they can do to better just be more relevant to what the real issue is. And that is developing these kids before they're even making these decisions at 18, 19 years old.
I think it's amazing that kids are playing more basketball than ever, but they come into the NBA less prepared to play NBA basketball than ever.
Especially the American kids.
Yes. That's a huge problem. All we see, I think it's an Instagram, Twitter thing where highlight culture. You know what I mean? I feel like it's highlight culture, and that's what these kids are kind of seeing. Like, I believe there's some correlation between the highlight culture and the All-Star game not being competitive anymore. You know what I mean? Like, nobody wants to be on the Summer Jam screen in that way because everybody's addicted to their phones. And these high school kids are so addicted to their phones. They're playing all this basketball, but I don't think they're actually being taught anything. You know what I mean? Like, that's a blanket statement, but I don't think I'm wrong.
You bring up the All-Star game, and I saw Silver's on CNN, and I would not want to be the generation of All-Star that ruins that game. You know, like, we just had the damn thing in Indiana, which, you know, we're not going to comment on the market and how they handled All-Star weekend. But I thought the coolest thing was Oscar Robertson was there, right?
Yep.
He's from Indiana. Yep. Oscar Robertson went through hell and high water to play basketball at every level, high school, college. When he gets to the NBA, the stories of how they had a fight, you know, and basically threatened to boycott the damn All-Star game as a means of, you know, compensating players. And Oscar Robertson's legacy in that, like, this man is still going to All-Star games and they can't even play hard for him. You know, that's where we're at. Like, you can't even bully these dudes to play hard in an All-Star game anymore. We had three fouls.
You can't shame them. We had 3,000 of them. It's a lack of shame.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's all related. I don't like talking about it in those terms. I really just hope that I don't have no answers, but it is a conversation. I don't want to be part of the generation that has to cover the loss or the stripping, you know, the absolute just emasculation of an All-Star game. And so I hope we get some kids that care about the game, about where the game's been and who's had to, you know, get the game to the point that it is, both like the, you know, actual skills of basketball, but also just, you know, the culture of it and the show of it.
Yeah.
So we got some things we got to figure out there.
Yeah. They say the children are the future and we're done with the 90s. I feel like I want to say we're done with y'all. Like, I can't stand these kids nowadays. I feel like a grumpy ass old man talking about how much I don't like these kids. But these kids get on my nerves. But but speaking of a group, Law, that's not kids, the Minnesota Timberwolves, or the Timber Pups, right? They decided that they're done with the Golden State Warriors. Like, Stephen Curry was lighting them up, but only played 30 minutes last night. And the Warriors, after being up, they just collapsed when Stephen Curry was up to 4. I think Steph was a +7 in the game. They lost by 4. Steph only played 30 minutes. Steve Kerr kept him on the bench a little too long, but that's what happens when you're 35, 36 years old. You got to get your rest. 8 of their next 10 on the road. The Houston Rockets, younger and stalking Golden State right now. Like, we're talking about the Clippers, and of course, we're going to go deep into that. But the Clippers are at least assured a playoff spot. Like, the Clippers they're not going to be caught in the play-in. This ain't dire. You know what I mean? Like, the Warriors could literally find themselves not just in on the back end of the play-in, which is where they were going to be anyway. They could find themselves out. So when Draymond Green says, "I don't give a damn about the Rockets," bro, you should.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing with the, I guess starting with the Warriors, they've been that team all year. Doesn't matter who's been playing, who's been out. Like, they've blown double-digit leads. I've seen it personally, you know. I was in Golden State for Valentine's Day right before the All-Star break, and it's preposterous that Golden State fumbled that game. I mean, and that was a Steph Curry 40-point game, something like that. Tyronn Lue got ejected. That's how upset he was. You never see Tyronn Lue get a technical, let alone, you know, get ejected. I think the last time T. Lue got ejected from something, he had to punch Eduardo Nájera. That's how long ago that was. So, Golden State's been that team all year. They handle prosperity poorly. And like, shout out to them for winning the championships they did. That's the only reason why we even talk about them. They are a team that everything about them is, we won before, so when some time matters, we can turn it on. And maybe the Rockets moving up is the thing that does, you know, make them tap in. But the team that I've observed, the Golden State team that I've observed, you can't trust them until it's triple zeros. And good luck to them, because the thing with Houston is they fell into their success. Alperen Şengün went down, and we were like, well, it's been a, you know, better season than the previous three.
Right.
And Jalen Green's turned into the Ja Morant clone that I thought that he was supposed to be when, you know, Dylan Brooks joined the team and Fred VanVleet joined the team to help stabilize them. With more shots and more space, Jalen Green has taken off, and that is propelled, like, Houston is hosting the Trailblazers tonight. Like, they're going to keep winning, and that's going to be the thing. They're going to have a winning, they should have a winning record at some point this week, probably possibly as soon as tonight. So shout out to the Rockets, because they have no tank. They're giving their pick away. They need to make the playoffs. And so it's going to be a fascinating end to the season, watching the end of the play-in race.
Yeah, and at a point, we're going to have a conversation about Ime Udoka. I just don't know what that conversation is going to be, because we don't know how to discuss people like that in a civilized manner. We just don't. Nah. Like, we don't know what the hell we're doing. You know what I mean? We don't. Now, speaking of a team that I am a lightweight concerned about, Law, the Milwaukee Bucks. You got to see Middleton, Giannis, Dame last night. Chris got the triple-double on the back end. You know what I mean? But he scored. He got the 10 points on the back end of it. But they destroyed Oklahoma City. And, it just shows how high how high the Bucks' ceiling is. You know what I mean? Like, when they are the talent there, when they can put it together, if they can find a way to keep Brook Lopez on the floor, you know what I mean, defensively, because he's such a huge key there.
Right.
And add to the fact that the Thunder are young and light in the pants. And if you are a bully ball team, you can bully them. And winning by 25, I think, is a hell of a statement.
It is. And the thing with the Bucks is, when they let Adrian Griffin go, we all knew that they had the record that they did, but the vibes weren't very good. The inconsistency on both ends of the floor weren't very good. Obviously, they, you know, had Terry Stotts as the assistant coach, and Terry couldn't even get through the damn preseason. He was like, nah, I'm out. And then they couldn't even get to November without their own players basically saying, Adrian, I know where you came from. I know what you're trying to do, but Brook is here and he ain't with it. Like, you got to keep switch. Like, there was inconsistency and just a lack of trust. If nothing else, Doc knows what he wants to do. Like, Doc has one of the strongest right hands in the league when it comes to winning games. You know, the issue is the counter.
Yes.
Like, and you got to, you know, you got to be a good team, and some extenuating circumstances have to come up. And, you know, I don't wish things on Doc. We just know history is history. But if, like, let's just keep it a being, like, Doc has come in there. He took his hits early. He challenged those dudes. He said before, you know, going to All-Star, that dudes was already in Cancun. Well, damn it, those dudes came back from Cancun, and they've been a powerful basketball team. And that's what's scary, because the Eastern Conference feels like it's the Celtics and everybody else. But the thing with the Bucks is, like you mentioned, they're huge. They know, their players know how to win, and their coach knows how to win. Maybe not together, but they have a bunch of guys who aren't going to be rattled by certain things. That's a difference between every Doc Rivers team before this and the Doc Rivers team that he has now. Like, even those Celtics that Doc won a championship with, people don't think about the fact that Ray Allen won conference finals appearance before that Celtics team. Paul Pierce won conference finals. Even Kevin Garnett, yeah, he was an MVP and everything. One time in all his years in Minnesota where he even made it out the first round.
Right.
Like, that team came together, they won, and then they were expected to win every year after that. So, like, this Bucks team is different for Doc. Like, these dudes have won for the most part, and the guy who hasn't is Dame. And Dame is in that category of, dude, you made one conference finals, you know? Like, he fits that part of the criteria for Doc's previous team. So, I'm excited for the Bucks. Like, I like seeing teams that can approach a level where they are maximizing their potential. And it's, you know, it'll make the Eastern Conference more interesting too, because, I mean, the Celtics really are clean in the league right now.
I mean, I have doubts about the Celtics, and I saw them on, I believe it was Friday night, they were in Detroit, and I ran into Brian Scalabrine, and we were talking, and he was like, dude, and I was explaining why I was just having doubts. And
I'm anxious to hear this.
Scott just looked at me and said, dude, you're just trying to find something. Uh-huh. I had to sit with that and think about that for a quick second. You know what I mean? Like, am I really just trying to make this a more competitive Eastern Conference than it needs to be? You know what I mean? Are the Celtics just that good? I think the record blows me away. I think the net rating blows me away. But I also look at, they don't have a Giannis. They don't have that one or two-way force that can just screw everything up. So and the Miami Heat are their playoff boogeyman, even though they beat the Heat 3 times this year. And I don't know if they play them another time, but yeah, it's just,
you know,
it's
the Heat ain't good for that stuff back-to-back years though. That's the problem with the Heat. The thing with the Celtics that's scary is because they are so reliable on a volatile factor, and that is shooting the three-pointer. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to be concerned. I want to see Drew Holiday play basketball again. I'm a little bit concerned about that. I'm concerned about the fact that Kristaps Porzingis, who is such a major factor for their diversity on both ends of the floor, you know, you're relying on a player who just rarely gets through the spring in one piece. You know, it's good that Kristaps is at least playing, but, you know, this is not a top, this is not a deep team.
Right.
When everyone's healthy, they are playoff deep enough. They have 8 guys that they know are going to play and that have been playing well and fit the ideal of how they want to play, which is they're going to beat you from three. Like, simple as that. They invite you to take threes, and they're like, well, we're going to make more threes than you. Good luck. You're not getting anything else. You're not getting free throws. You're not getting anything at the rim. And that's where Porzingis comes in. That's where Drew Holiday comes in, right? They have guys who are going to defend, and they have the size there. Their worst three-point shooters are their best players,
right?
Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Right.
And that's what makes them interesting. It's that they're not a complicated team, Vinny. Like, people who don't like the Celtics, they always try and come at Joe Mazzulla basically and say, there's nothing complicated about what you're doing. And you know what? That's true. Like, the Celtics are a bit of an experiment. They are basically going out and saying, our best players are pull-up three-point shooters. You overreact to them. We have guys to make you pay all around. You overreact with your switching, and we have a big guy now in Porzingis who will crush you. And basically, if you think you're a paint team, we're going to be better than you there. And if you think you're a three-point shooting team, we're going to beat you in that numbers game. They're an experiment. Every Celtics loss is basically in clutch time.
Yep.
Every game.
Yep.
And that's where the concern is. When the game slows down, when the attention to detail of the threes comes in, how good are the Celtics? They are going to struggle in the playoffs. There's going to be some stressful playoff series for the Celtics. I'm not saying that they're going to lose. I'm just saying I think the Celtics know that the playoffs are going to be way harder than, you know, the world beaters that they've been, especially since the All-Star break.
I think, and we're going to break here before we start really going deep on the Clippers. I think I look at the Celtics as a team. If I think of them as an NFL team that plays in a dome, you know what I mean? You play in a dome, yeah. You throw the ball all around. They're like not quite the Miami Dolphins. You know what I mean? Not quite the Dolphins this year.
They're Peyton's Colts before they figured it out.
Yes. They're like the RCA Colts. when they played in the dome and they were throwing it around to Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison and all that, man, you put Peyton Manning in that arm, that noodle arm in the cold, baby, we had some problems.
Yep.
Are you going to be able, with increased physicality on the perimeter, be able to take those threes in volume? It does a lot to take 40 threes a night, win or lose, especially in a playoff setting where the refs are going to let some physicality go. Like, I know we saw a 150-145 game last night. That's not going to be the rule in the playoffs. But Law Murray is here to talk about the Clippers. So when we come back, we're going to go deep on one of the two teams I am very concerned about heading into the last handful of games in the season. We're going to pay some bills right now. Welcome back to The Good Word. Law Murray from The Athletic joining us. Of course, Law covers the LA Clippers. Law, the Clippers, I have questions and I have a lot of concerns. I'm concerned about the Clippers and I'm concerned about Phoenix. Me and Howard Beck talked about that last week on the show. yesterday, which is if you're listening to it on Monday, this is, you know, Sunday, the Clippers were at home against the Philadelphia 76ers. No Embiid, no Lowry, no Batum, no Melton, no Covington. No problem for the Philadelphia 76ers. 121-107. Russ will be back, I believe, tonight against the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers will be on that LA-LA back-to-back. Is the struggle, Law, just as simple as we just need Russell Westbrook back because of the change of pace, because all of our old guys play like they're slow, you know, play slow, play deliberately, and we need this change of pace? Or is there a fundamental flaw with what we've seen outside of that two-month stretch where they basically just ran through the league? I think they won, like, I think they were, what, 23-5 in December and January?
Right. Listen, I'm at the point where it's a damn shame that we're talking about Russ having to save this damn team. It should not have to be like this. Russ should be able to come back, ease into a team that, honestly, a week ago should have been like, okay, look at the schedule. We should clean up, basically. And when they lost to the Hawks, the only kind of, I don't want to even say excuse, like, I was on the damn trip to Chicago and New Orleans. I came home. I'm like, man, I really couldn't hoop right now. I went to the gym. I lifted. So, you know, shout out to me for that. But I was like, this is going to be tough to, like, play. Like, my body wasn't really kind of acclimated to life. And I still had a pack because that was the only game at home out of a 5-game stretch. You know, like, the mm-hmm. Hawks game might as well have been a road game. And they got smacked by Atlanta Hawks team that was missing Trae Young. Like, we keep talking about the Clippers losing and not competing against teams that don't have their full deck, basically. You know, yeah. They lost to the Bucks when Giannis not playing. They lost to the Timberwolves where they had a 22-point lead on national television at home. The only game in a 5-game stretch where, you know, they played five games in 7 days. So that was the only one that wasn't a back-to-back. Cat wasn't there, and they absolutely embarrassed themselves. Wound up being turned around by 44 points in that game. The Sixers game, like, look, it was a Sunday matinee. I knew that the Clippers were going to be down at some point because they've not taken a single matinee game and played to their potential all year. Like, they were down, like, damn near 20 points to the Brooklyn Nets, are crying out loud, in late January, and needed Russell Westbrook playing the center position, basically. And when I say playing center, he's guarding Nicholas Claxton in a lineup right. That doesn't have your traditional centers on the floor, okay? And he was the impetus of that turnaround. That was late January. The game after that, they beat the Lakers. And again, they're playing well. And Tyronn Lue saying, they basically called them, you know, they said they were too Hollywood. That even though they won, they weren't playing the type of basketball that they needed to, you know, actually show that they were contenders. And this is before the best Grammy trip in franchise history. So they've been sounding their own alarm, Vinny, for the greater part of 3 months. It's late March, right? Last week of March. I've been hearing this about the Clippers basically before MLK Day. And so the concern with the Clippers is you're bringing Russell Westbrook back. And we've had to talk about this team's offense being inconsistent. We've had to talk about what has literally been a bottom five defense since they got home from the Grammy trip. We've had to talk about the vibes being off, people's contract situations, players on the bench being moody, literally third stringers needing to stay home before the All-Star break because they were, you know, they felt like they deserved to play. And then certain guys got a chance to play with Russell Westbrook out and wound up right back on the bench again. It's just too much stuff going on, and the too much stuff needs to be nipped in the bud, because a lot of it doesn't have to do with basketball. But since we're here to talk about basketball, this is a team that has too many holes to plug, and the only thing that I can offer when it comes to Russ is that dude plays hard all the time. I don't need to talk about intensity issues with Russell Westbrook. I don't need to talk about lack of physicality with Russell Westbrook. Russell is a hammer.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes you don't need a hammer, but Russ is going to be a hammer. And you know what? Maybe they need that to inspire them to play the kind of basketball, to start games and finish games with what is needed to bring that team's level back up. I'm not. It's just bad that that's the conversation that we're having in the last week of March. But that's where we're at.
When Anthony Edwards goes on national television in your building and says, "Oh, when Kawhi went out, I saw food on the other end." Those dudes are food.
And he said it before.
I don't think people understand the disrespect. It was, I don't know, intentional or not. Doesn't matter, right?
No, it was intentional. He knew what he was doing.
He knew what he was doing. He just did it with a smile, right?
Yep.
He did it with a smile. He did it with some homespun country, you know, draw to it. But he said the Clippers were food because Kawhi Leonard wasn't there. And I know that Kawhi Leonard is a playoff terminator. I'm 100% with you there. But James Harden, post-All-Star break, has not looked good at all, right? He looked really good when he first got there. Law, tell me if this is, even with all the issues that you brought up, because you brought up so many different things, I want to nail down on one. Is this team old? Have they passed the sweet spot of where they can rev it up? I know they're old, but I'm saying old to where you can't hit the high notes anymore. You know what I mean? You are literally living off of past hits and you ain't got another hit in you. Is that what we're seeing when I see Minnesota run past them? When I see the New Orleans Pelicans run past them? Is it the matter of, it's not just experience, it's age, and they're getting hit with age right now?
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly regular season old. And what I mean by that is, you know, you come into the gym, it's a matinee game, or it's a zero nights rest game, or you've been on a five game, or the Clippers don't have road trips that long, but an extended period where, you know, the schedule's a little imbalanced and you don't know what you're going to get from them. I do think that there will be another level of attention and focus that improves their performance in the playoffs. And that's something that we've seen from this group in particular. We've seen that in a lot of older teams. I think they want to get to that seven game series and really lock in. The concern is, I don't think you start games and have leads and then decide we're just going to be in regular season mode. Like, I think what's more concerning to me than even the Sixers loss or the Hawks loss, where they were down big early, are the games like those Timberwolves games, the Lakers game at the end of February, a game that Russ did play in. But Paul didn't and Zoo didn't, but still, they were 21 in the fourth quarter. You know, that was one of two home games out of the last 11 where they didn't trail by double digits. You know, when they went to Milwaukee and they were up 15 in the third quarter and they just got lit up. Like, you know, guys are missing free throws. Guys are just, you know, bad lineups are on the floor. That's a whole team thing. It's a shared thing. And that's an old Milwaukee Bucks team. You know what I mean? So, When I look at age, I look at, okay, how much of it is physical and how much of it is just being bored with your own success or bored with the foundation that you set for yourself? Because this team, I will give them a whole lot of credit for looking like one of the best teams, if not the best team, for a significant sample size. And so they're relying on that, and that's what their confidence is. Their issue really isn't even about them. It's about everybody else. Vinny, out of all the other top five teams in the Western Conference, they all have the confidence knowing that they're younger than the Clippers. Some of them are bigger than the Clippers. They are, in a lot of cases, not just younger, but more athletic, bigger. They beat them multiple times, and they're probably going to have home court advantage. That's the issue. The Clippers like to say, we're just worried about us. But the issue is guys like Anthony Edwards say, yeah, well, we're looking at you and we ain't worried either.
Food. That's what the man said. He went on national TV with Stephanie Reddy and said, they're food. That, I will never get over that. I will never get over that. I know that, and you know this because you hoop. You know that if someone that good is calling someone else who's supposed to be that good food, that there is it's a confidence thing. Like, you don't bother us. Not even, you don't scare us. You don't even bother us. We barely respect you. That's what it says.
Yeah. They didn't, like, there are some, and that's the thing I like about Anthony Edwards. Like, Anthony is so casual and so chill. Like, there's no quote-unquote media training with Anthony Edwards. Like, he's authentic. And you know what? That's going to be in some people's feelings. But on the other hand, he's a lot more honest than, you know, someone who's going to give the stock respect that the Clippers are going to get from so many guys. Oh, they got one of the greatest coaches and tacticians, or they have four future Hall of Famers. They've got guys who've won championships, you know, in both their starting and their second units. And you know what? Respect is nice. It's you know, what we all should kind of strive for. You know, we can acknowledge that. But what guys say in public ain't how they feel in the locker rooms or how they feel in the practice. Or, like, look at certain scouting reports. If you get a chance to really hear about what people say, you know, when they're preparing to play teams, no, they're not calling them future Hall of Famers. They're saying this dude can't go left. That dude is going to take shots that he shouldn't take. That dude is going to guard on the ball, but as soon as the ball swings, he lost. Shot goes up, and you can expect him to jump instead of box out. And you know what? When you're playing the Clippers, they are too easy to play. They're too easy to play against. They're powerful when everything is set according to how they want to play, which right. is a half-court game. If James can get to his spots in the pick and roll, he's going to feed everybody. If Paul is cooking and you're not physical with him and he's involved and locked in, that dude looks like every, you know, 15-year-old's favorite player. Kawhi, you don't double him and he's decisive, he's killing you. If they get a good whistle, they're outscoring you from the free throw line every night, because on the defensive end, the one thing the Clippers do well is they don't foul. And because they don't foul, they're basically going to win the free throw margin. It's like how the Celtics win the three-point margin. The problem with the Clippers is everything else. You take one thing off that little program and they're screwed. If their spacing's wrong, that leads to the turnovers. The turnovers leads to the fast break where they're too old to get back, especially when James is on the floor. And if you don't score on the fast break, you're probably going to score on the offensive rebound. You're going to win possession battles against this team. Even though the Clippers are extremely talented in putting the ball in the basket and pretty good at stopping you from putting the ball in the basket, you are more than likely going to take more shots than the Clippers are on a given in any given game. And the thing that the Clippers should be more concerned about lately, especially without Russ, they are way too easy to allow the easiest three-point shots in the league against. They're allowing 41% threes since Russ went out. And that tells me two things. Number one, they're not rotating like they should be. Number two, they have to rotate more often than they need to, because the point of attack defense hasn't been there. Because
Russ is not even a great point of attack defender.
For this team, he is, because he can guard anybody. The issues with the Clippers is they can't always choose what lineups they want to have Russ there with. But that's the number one thing they need Russ back for. They need Russ to basically take a lot of those minutes where guys like Anthony Edwards is going off. You know, the small guards like Tyrese Maxey, De'Aaron Fox, they need to calm those dudes down. Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard obviously went off in games where Russ wasn't there. Like, Russ doesn't have the same offensive responsibilities as even his Lakers game tenure. So when Russ gets in there, his job is to basically play hard and play with as much physicality and intensity that he can for the 20, 25 minutes that he's out here. You rarely see a 30-minute game from Russ, but he should be in a safe 20 to 25-minute role, and his absence pretty much showed where his value is. I guarantee you only one thing with Russ coming back. They're going to hit people more often. Russ is going to get into these dudes' net a little bit more, because those other guys just don't have the intensity. James, Paul, Kawhi, they are a lot more even keeled. They're a lot more grounded. Russ is going to come in there and he's going to start some damn fires. It might not turn out the way that you want for other reasons, but damn it, one thing for sure is you're going to feel them a lot more over these last 3 weeks. That's the one thing I will plant a flag on with Russ coming back. And so that's really all I can say there, because it's a shame that we're talking about this after the success that the Clippers had for most of the winter.
Yeah, and you brought up something earlier when you talked about Ty Lue. Ty Lue said these dudes are Hollywood. And you brought up Harden and PG and Kawhi being very even keel. Like, it's not even like a too nice thing. They're too cool. You know what I mean? They're very cool. They're not going to panic, which you don't want veterans to panic. If veterans start panicking, you got problems. But there isn't this sense of urgency. There's a fine line between panic and urgency, and I don't think that they're anywhere close to it. Now, you brought up the interesting thing about the quote-unquote four Hall of Famers, but they're not Hall of Fame. They're Hall of Fame resumes, but they're not playing like Hall of Famers. What would constitute a successful season for the Clippers, Law? Because you're going into the Intuit Dome next year, which is in downtown Inglewood, is right next to SoFi, and SoFi is on the other side of the old Forum. So you're in old Laker sort of territory. Ty Lue has a year remaining after this season, right? In a new coaching climate where Monty Williams got a big bag, which basically started everything. Then Pop got the bag. Then Steve Kerr got the bag. Then Eric Spoelstra got the bag. Ty Lue is in that category of coach, if not the best tactician in basketball.
Got to throw Jamal Mosley in there too, right?
Jamal, he didn't get that super bag. You know what I mean? Like as far as resume, but I'm with you on Jamal Mosley being really underrated and working a lot with what he got over there. It's funny what happens when a franchise hires a young coach for a young team. You know, that's a story for another day. I'll let some people figure that out. But Law, what's at stake here for the Clippers, for Ty Lue, for everybody except for Kawhi Leonard, who's contract situation will be up in the air because Kawhi signed an extension. Like, do you feel any, I won't say tension is the word, but do you feel the stakes when you're around a team?
Oh, absolutely. The playoffs, to borrow a Lawrence Frank term, are a great revealer. And what we know is that there's one guy that, you know, took care of the business, not just early, but in a way where he tried to minimize that for his team because they were playing great when the extension was signed in January. Kawhi basically declared publicly that he expects Paul and James to be able to be back based off of the deal that Kawhi signed. Kawhi signed his deal around the same time Eric Spoelstra's contract was announced. And you know, T. Lou and Eric Spoelstra hung out for weeks over the summer. They're about to be together again this next summer. There's a real fellowship there. Yep. And T. Lou was like, Spo's good. You know, Spo's feeling good, right? Like the playoffs, a successful season externally is this team has to win a championship now because there's no guarantee they will ever get a chance to have this group back again from a up and down, you know? Reasonably speaking, like, let's be real, one team's going to win the championship and, you know, the Clippers have not looked like a contender, right? So, reasonably speaking, I think this team has to at least get back to the conference finals to have any kind of floor for a status quo. And they've done that under T. Lou. His first year, they lost Kawhi in the semifinals against a number one seed, and they still found a way to make it to the conference finals. And everyone knew that they were punching. They didn't have a full deck there. This team has a full deck for the first time, for now, knock on wood, but for the first time in 3 years. And so you want to get Paul and Kawhi to the playoffs and through the playoffs healthy. If that team, with everybody healthy, can't get to at least the conference finals, I just don't see a scenario. I mean, I can see a scenario, but I see more likely scenarios where they move on from several parts of the current era. And that's at head coach. That's at the star level. That's at the role player level. That affects a guy, you know, like Russ. You know, I don't know. These guys want to be together, man. Like, this is a lot more difficult to cover than the Lob City Clippers. Because when we talk over the summer, Vinny, the Lob City Clippers, and they've been on every damn podcast, whether it's their own or somebody else's, to express how much they didn't like each other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, when you have a team that doesn't get along, it's easy to break them up because they're like, you know, they're only here for the basketball. These guys are the same age, almost the same draft classes. They grew up together knowing each other. None of these dudes were great like players going into college. None of them were. We weren't talking about any of these guys like they were future.
They didn't have the pedigree.
Right. They've all, even though they all like earned something early in their careers, they all had to get something out the mud. You know, everybody, Russ, James, PG, Kawhi, all those guys had to really, whether it was high school, college, early NBA, they had to earn their names. None of those dudes came in, you know, five star or anything. So right. These guys care for each other, but business is business. And business right now is going to take priority once the playoffs are over. And if the playoffs are over in June, that's one conversation. But if the playoffs are over the first week of May, it's like you're not, everyone knows it's over. T. Lou's not worried because he's going to get paid regardless. He's going to get paid by somebody. It better be the Clippers because the Clippers ain't upgrading on head coach, you know, and T. Lou knows that. But I think T. Lou's been exasperated. Dude, I can't get through a week without T. Lou having to hold back some profanity at the press conference table. And T. Lou is Bill Belichick when it comes to press conferences. He don't want to say anything right. That's going to be something beyond, you know, something that escapes team the four walls of the locker room. But it's getting harder for him because he knows that a voice only carries so long when you're the head coach. He knows this. He's been a player in this league. He's already been with Cleveland, won a championship, and left all in 5 years. He knows what the cycle is.
And he knows the stress of the job. Remember, that man took time off in Cleveland.
That was only 6 years ago. You know, he's only gotten older. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You only get older. You only recognize more urgency in the moment. You only see your own, even as a coach, you only see your own basketball mentality. And it's a little bit different when you're a coach than a player because it's nowhere near the same. You're not dependent on your body per se, but you only have a certain, you know, finite amount of energy, which brings me to a guy like Paul George. And you said it, when Paul is locked in, he is every 15-year-old's favorite player. Smooth game, all of that stuff, right? He's got a $48 million option for next season. I would think that Paul George at, 33, is going to say, you know what, I'm going to turn down this 48, and I'm going to get me long money because you get your long money while you have your health.
Right.
In a second apron tax world, how does that work? Because we're hearing about teams that want to make a run at Paul George in the summer, and that to me sounds A, really intriguing, but also, Law, why would teams be feeling like they can go and make a run at Paul George to maybe be their third best player, whatever the case may be? He should be cemented as a Clipper. He should be, right? But clearly something isn't quite connected there right now. How important is the next 2 months for Paul George?
I think for Paul, Paul's one of those players where his basketball mortality has been a conversation for a long time. I mean, we're talking about 10, he's coming up on 10 years since that leg break playing at the Olympics that changed his whole career. You know, like we were talking about Paul as that next guy for a reason. It's not just what he was doing individually. He was leading a really hard to watch Indiana Pacers team, the back-to-back conference finals, okay? A Pacers team that hadn't had any level of postseason success since Malice at the Palace. And like that's who Paul George established himself to be before year five. And Paul George's fifth year in the league was spent recovering from this leg fracture. And that dude worked so hard that he got back in time where everyone else who suffers the same injuries, remember the conversation with Gordon Hayward, I mean, Rachel Nichols couldn't go a month without mentioning, hey, Gordon Hayward might come back for the Celtics because of what happened with Paul. It's like, nah, they ain't built the same. And so ever since then, you know, Paul's had more, he's had something every year since he joined Oklahoma City. You know, he has not gotten to the playoffs in one piece since leaving Indiana. You know, his 2 years in OKC, it was one thing or another. It was the knee, it was the elbow, it was the shoulders.
The year where he finished third in MVP vote, and he had the shoulder problem that really hindered him in the playoffs against Portland. I want to say.
Yeah, against Portland. And it was a damn shame because, yeah, like that dude was arguably the best two-way player in the league. Like literally top three in MVP, top three in defense player of the year. Playing with Russell Westbrook, who was in that man's ear pushing him to be his best. That has, you know, we've seen that void filled again. Russell Westbrook has a way of getting guys to, you know, be engaged in ways that whether you're a star or a role player, you don't have, like, that's what's special about this group. So with Paul, it's like, on one hand, you're playing every game with your parents there, your boys there, you're playing your teammates, you're in the locker room, you know, you got those guys there. One of your assistant coaches is Brian Shaw, who was there with you when you ascended to that star status in Indiana. Another assistant coach is Dante Jones, who was your, you know, your vet when he was a rookie. There's a real family there, you know, like Paul wants to be here. And at the same time, Paul knows what organization he joined. And you know what? Paul knows how he joined that organization. He signed a long-term extension with OKC after being there for a year because the vibes were that good. Like, the relationship was there. He's like, I'm not even going to meet with the Lakers. I'm going to be here. A year later, he's like, I'm going to take this contract that I signed with y'all to go home and join my other boys. So, you know, it can go both ways. You know,
yep.
The Clippers, I always go back to this. I mentioned this to you over the summer. They signed Blake Griffin and traded Chris Paul. And Blake didn't even make it to MLK Day, first year of that contract extension. What's stopping the Clippers from doing the same thing? You know, the Clippers know that they can't give Paul a blank check. They didn't even do that for Kawhi. So the conversations have been opened. I don't think there's any animosity there. I think it's just natural difficulties when you're talking about everything hitting at you at once. It's not just a business decision. It is emotional when it comes to the contract, the fact that, you know, this is a whole lot easier to take whatever's on the table if you win a championship or you touch the championship. Okay. Every team that gets to a finals, they don't win it, but damn it, they feel it. They see the ropes. They see things looking a lot different. They see the fact that they're the only two teams playing. The Clippers have never experienced that as a franchise, and Paul's the only one of those future Hall of Famers who's never experienced that environment as a player. He's been in the conference finals 3 times and hasn't been able to break through. He's the guy that everyone's looking forward to seeing. He is a guy who, you know, he's still going to All-Star in Indiana and Utah. And he said every time, I don't know if I'll be back here. He knows the landscape of the league. He knows where he's at. Paul is a very conscious basketball player and very conscious participant in where he is in basketball history, where his legacy is. This is the most important thing for him. I think James will be fine. Kawhi obviously has his contract. And I think Russ is at a certain level of peace with everything with him. You know, Russ is already on the other side of, hey, he's not making that money now. You know, everything's interesting with Paul because there's so many different ways this can go depending on how deep the Clippers go in the playoffs.
Man, I think when we look back on it, we're going to be able to sort of document how impressive 2021 was for Paul George, because he went from being, hey, Kawhi Leonard's taking the, you know, the tougher matchup, he's a high usage guy, to all of a sudden, I have to carry this team out of the second round. You know, of course, you had the Terrence Mann 40-point game against Utah that certainly helped. But Paul George was the catalyst for that team coming to within 2 games of the NBA Finals. One of those games was the Valley Oop, or whatever the hell we called that, that last second thing. You're basically saying that to some degree, 3 years ago was the best that we were going to see Paul George, was the closest that we could have seen the Clippers to getting the championship. And they were without their best player. And they didn't have this level of star power behind it. It was Kawhi, Paul George, and a bunch of good players that were riding this wave. And now you don't, like you said at the start of the show, the vibes aren't that great right now, but everybody knows what's at stake. So I say that to circle here, Law. You have the Intuit Dome opening up. And I don't think people understand how big that is for them to have their own home, to have their own identity, to be separate from the LA Live Lakers. You know what I mean? You're moving the G League team to San Diego, back to San Diego, where the Clippers were before they moved to Los Angeles in the, you know, in the mid 80s. How big of is this for the Clippers as a franchise for the next couple of years, for the next couple of months, in putting real imprints? And we talked about this a little bit before, the street lights over, you know, starlights or whatever that, you know, that slogan. I can't remember exactly what it was, but How important is this for them? Because the Lakers are in the play and the Clippers are not. For them to try to gain some turf in LA. Not just a championship, but turf.
I mean, we've been talking about that for the better part of a dozen years. Like, the Lakers, it's an anomaly when they're good. I know what the franchise history is. I know what the bubble gave us, even last year when they made their run. But, I mean, the Lakers have rarely been better than the Clippers, basically since Kobe Bryant tore his Achilles tendon. And so we've had this conversation about, hey, your playoff success could really make a difference. And they just, you know, they haven't broken through and taken advantage of it as a franchise. It doesn't matter who's been playing. It doesn't matter who's been coaching. It doesn't matter what the uniforms have looked like, damn it. Like, we've had this conversation for the better part of a decade. So it's more of the same there, you know? You have an opportunity to close the damn building down and, you know, do it with these guys on the team. So many guys that have an area connection. That's the thing. The Clippers have really, they've tried to build a footprint in LA that goes beyond basketball, that goes beyond the players on the team. Like, you know, you go to these parks and recreation centers and there's a Clippers logo on all of them. That's what the Ballmer family has done as far as just beautifying the area, like making it a community thing. So, I mean, it's got to be basketball, though. You know, you got to win at a time when no one else is watching anyone else. The Clippers have mastered. This is 13 years in a row, Vinny, where they've had a winning season. There's only six other teams in franchise and in NBA league history that have a longer streak of winning seasons. Okay. And I think of only two that didn't have a championship attached to them.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Spurs went 20 some years,
right?
But there's only been two of those teams that did it without attaching a championship. That was the Utah Jazz during their run and the Blazers during their run that started with Clyde and ended in the late 2000s. So like, I look at this Clippers team and where they are as a franchise, as far as a foothold goes, yeah, the Intuit Dome is an opportunity that they're never going to have again. They're never going to, you know, I'm sure they'll probably move into a building long after we're done covering the league and whatnot, or at least my robot hasn't been developed yet to think about those things. But like, no, nah, like, for everybody's relevant time in this generation, this era that we're in, like, yeah, you only get one Intuit Dome. You only get one chance to do this in this time. And it's even more special because of the players. Like, these guys don't – it's not like they came from Texas and Florida and New York. They're L.A. guys, right?
They're invested here. Like, this means something – this means as much to them as it does the franchise.
Right. So the stories have been written. Ownerships love stories. But the thing is, you got to actually, you know, fulfill whatever you've written. And that's the hard part. That's the part that the Clippers, again, they haven't mastered that. This team in a vacuum is capable of winning a championship, Vinny. They still are, even with the nasty basketball that they've played for the greater part of a month and a half. Their issue isn't themselves. It's everybody else. You should trust any of the other top teams in the West more than the Clippers right now, just based off of what we've seen.
The evidence is the evidence. And there are two teams that this means a lot for this year. The Clippers are one, the Phoenix Suns are the other, and for completely different reasons. But that is why I think the Western Conference playoffs will be extremely, extremely intriguing. I always like hanging out in LA during the playoffs. I'm not one of those people that says, yeah, let's see Oklahoma City in the NBA Finals. Yeah, that sounds nice. Yeah, and T.S. got to stay there for 5 or 6 days in a row, and you got to find something to do. Like, other than that, you know what I mean? Like, but seriously, the Clippers putting it together would actually be a really good story for the NBA. And it certainly does not hurt that you have a guy like Steve Ballmer, who's a crazy person. I say that affectionately. He's a crazy person. Kawhi Leonard is a playoff terminator who can maybe still get there. And Paul George, who Law went deep on, is a very intriguing player for the present and the future. That, ladies and gentlemen, is my man Law Murray from The Athletic. Law, you got anything else you need to plug? I know you just dropped a story today on Russell Westbrook. Anything else you got coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, you know, shout out to the people who cover this league, man. And shout out to the fans and the people who really engage with the people who are like really trying to read the context of what we're talking about. Like, got a lot of people out here just on content and not knocking hustles, but some of us are really trying to give y'all the most content wise. And it requires getting off of social media a little bit. You know, it requires not reading so deep into isolated quotes, maybe even quotes said on this podcast. So, you know, the great thing about you, Vinny, is you're not just on the mic. You know, you're not just at games and you're not just posting stuff. Like, you're reporting, you're writing, you have a whole thread of what you've seen over not just this season, but all your years being in this space. And so, you know, I really appreciate anyone who's subs to The Athletic, anyone who's read my stuff, not just this season, but going back. That means a lot. So that's my shout out. I work with a great team and we got so much more stuff that we're going to have to do when the playoffs start, because we know a lot more people will be paying attention. So shout out to everybody who's doing it on that level. And shout out to the people who are engaging with us in good faith. That's my shout out.
Engaging with us in good faith. Law Murray, ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for joining me, man. Really, really appreciate you. Thanks to producer John, the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. Dan, we'll be back for another episode of Divine Intervention tomorrow. I'll be back on Wednesday for Haberstroh Wednesdays here on The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.